Cortisol, the great moderator and the silent enabler. You'd think cortisol is just a stress hormone, but it's not. It's a negotiator, a thermostat, and in this story, a gatekeeper. And for me, it may have been the worst kind of peacekeeper, the kind that keeps things quiet long enough for an invader to entrench. Why cortisol matters for the invader. It suppresses the immune surveillance, especially T cells and cytokine signaling. It blunts fever, inflammation, and early detection. It breaks down muscle and connective tissue, creating fuel for fungal metabolism. It encourages fat redistribution, which may aid the invader's strategic targeting of energy reserves. It promotes electrolyte loss, particularly potassium, which weakens intracellular defenses. And if cortisol becomes chronically elevated or injected exogenously, for example, steroids make me crazy, literally, it creates the perfect habitat for a slow, intelligent invader. A fungus can't thrive in chaos. It needs a predictable, low-reactivity host. Cortisol provides that, especially if the rest of the hormone chain is broken. A gallery of redacted evidence as remembered and reconstructed from the missing archive. They say a picture is worth 1,000 words. In my case, it might be worth 1,000 silences, each one deeper than the last. What follows is a reconstruction of the only known photographic documentation of the condition from an article that came and went like a fever dream filled with haunting images and captions that felt more like confessions. They are in random order because that's how I got to encounter them, adding them to my memories like an LLM finding new data. I call this the haunted gallery. People packed in ice. The first image I'm remembering is unforgettable, a shirtless standing man, not screaming, just existing, packed in ice like meat, trying to cool the burn that raged his skin. He was being attended to by a nurse. The caption stated something like to reduce the agony and noted that the blood supply didn't return to the skin once they were placed in ice, making it an irreversible step. The Night Walker. Next was a blurry, grain-smeared shot taken at night, supposedly the only photo ever captured of someone mid-transition between energy systems. The subject had just taken a hot bath around a big bonfire. The heat of the bath triggers this transition. He walked in the shadows, only half seen due to the nighttime exposure on an outdoor path with primitive photographic equipment. The caption noted his gait that wasn't quite human, a mechanical rhythm, something wrong in the timing. The article stated that this occurred only once for each subject and noted it was the point at which their system began. The Night Walker. Next was a blurry, grain-smeared shot taken at night, supposedly the only photo ever captured of someone mid-transition between energy systems. The subject had just taken a hot bath around a big bonfire. The heat of the bath triggers this transition. He walked in the shadows, only half seen due to the nighttime exposure on an outdoor path with primitive photographic equipment. The caption noted his gait that wasn't quite human, a mechanical rhythm, something wrong in the timing. The article stated that this occurred only once for each subject and noted it was the point at which their system begins primarily burning ketones. The brain had to adapt to this new energy supply along with its nervous system. The next morning, their gait would return to normal. I had this night, and I documented it at the time. Again, I'll try to get to it, but it doesn't belong here. The feast. Then, a celebration. A late night scene in a room the size of a barn with a huge table covered in food. Laughter. Survivors. No, not forever. Just men that it had endured the scientifically infeasible up to this point. The caption noted these men were in part of the final phase, which is actually many phases that come at you rapid fire. They could finally eat anything they wanted again after a long period when the physicians had them limit their intake to protein. The article spoke about how during the day they could be found leaning up against the wall in line at the bathhouse. For steam baths or ice, I can't say. I only know it mentioned they would return for their late meal, pink skinned from their daily interlude. And I'm going to interject here. I'm pretty sure I'm in this phase here, or just after this phase. And It would have been, they were there for the heat. My hands are freezing cold. It noted how they couldn't eat during the day without triggering a cascade of ill effects, and how a persistent chill clung to their skin regardless of layers. So they drifted towards the bathhouse just down the road from where they were housed, an unspoken ritual of warmth and survival. That night's feast, however brief, became their sacred defiance, a rare moment when the body welcomed food without punishment. It spoke of the people nearest to the end, struggling to sit up straight to keep their ribs and back from popping due to the loss of structural integrity. This wasn't recovery, it was rebellion. The men were known to wear perfume because of their bad body odor at this stage. Cot room. The cot room. An overhead shot of a dimly lit dormitory-style room, rows of narrow beds or cots, each maybe 4 or 5 feet apart. The article described how the men would lie still at night, fighting the condition in silence, but then sometimes a voice would ring out in the darkness, a dry joke, a memory, a fragile human thread pulled tight across their shared suffering. They'd laugh, not because it was funny, but because laughter still worked. That was reason enough. The contrast agent. An X-ray, a slow leak traced in the intestines using contrast dye. The contrast agent. An X-ray, a slow leak traced in the intestines using contrast dye. The caption casually noted that the patient stroked out just hours later. Possibly from the agent itself, it read. No further comment. The implication hung in the air like radiation. The pull-up man. A picture of a man mid-rep on a pull-up bar, healthy looking, strong. The article said he died 1 or 2 weeks later. Exercise at that point had torn his heart, literally. The tissue, weakened by repeated transitions between acidic and basic states, had become soft, pliable like uncooked meat. The effort was known to cause tears in the valves of the heart. The ice cream scene. Another body, this one surrounded by empty ice cream containers, a suicide of sorts. The caption made it clear the stomach had stopped and eating was like dumping concrete into a shut down engine, but the pain of starving slowly while fully conscious drove them to it. Rushing toward death, the article called it. Historical note, ice cream was around, but relatively new, and did in fact come in containers at this time. I thought it odd, but my research confirmed it. Ice cream was all the rage. Ketos and the toads. Here was another photo that revealed just how complex this condition was and how hard it is for me to try and communicate all the phases and all the symptoms. It showed divergent paths. Some men at a certain fork simply stopped eating. Those who didn't were called ketos, a group that continued but on a path with a different ending. But among those, a few would later take another path. They were placed in brine baths and given ethanol through a long rubber tube. The candidiasis, the caption noted, could metabolize ethanol, but at a price. The entire system became acidified, chemically inhospitable. The brine helped buffer it, but not without consequence. Their flesh grew soft, too soft. The caption warned caretakers had to be extraordinarily gentle. You could put a hand through a toad's chest wall without much effort, it read. And that name stuck, toads, for those who had sacrificed structure in a last bid to stay alive, submerged in brine. The final survivor and the withered arm. And finally, the one they named. The longest survivor after a stomach shutdown, gaunt and stooped. To get that far, he moved as little and spoke as little as possible, never letting water touch his skin. The scientists had found, established, documented that water was drawn into the body, worsening the internal storm. Remembering every single little phase is something completely different, but all driven by changes in electrolytic functions, not levels so much, functions. Another man supported him for the photo. Under his rib cage, on his right side, discoloration from the bile that had leaked into his skin from his liver after the gallbladder finally went in the final stage. One more detail, maybe part of the same image or maybe a separate one. The subject's arm shriveled into almost nothing. The caption explained it simply. The candidiasis had adapted to consume the apoptotic tissue, and the muscle had been used too much. nerve signals during muscle usage were like flares to the candidiasis seeking fuel, pulling the fungal threat inward, targeting ATP itself. From there, it could spread to the muscles themselves, consuming the cell membranes. The mouth that still works. Two figures stand in the dim light, shirtless, gaunt bodies wasted down to the bare design. Each is holding something, some lump of food, but their faces are hollowed with the effort. They're trying to chew, but it's not working, not really. Their stomachs have stopped. The signal isn't going through. Swallowing's gone offline, but they chew anyway. They spit it out, then try again, because one part still worked, the mouth. That was all they had, one last door into the system, one last way to absorb something, anything, salt, nutrients, a trickle of life, and they'd been trained by years of phases, cramps, retching, and collapse, trained by every physician and every ounce of instinct to eat no matter what, no matter the pain, no matter the nausea, you don't stop, you can't stop. The caption reads, at this stage, they are expected to die within a day or two, but they can still chew because they remember what they've been trained to, eat no matter what. Posture changes. One subject, several photos, taken years apart or perhaps hand-drawn, skeletal distortion over time, gradual curvature, misalignment, vertebral spacing changes, all the visible signs of structural degradation. But here's the thing. They called it aging, degeneration, maybe even osteoporosis. What they didn't call it? Substitution. You can almost feel it in that drawing. The bones didn't just weaken, they morphed, bent by stress. Yes, but also by composition. When you replace calcium with a patchwork of impostors, weaker, brittle metals that the scan can't distinguish, of course, the architecture changes. It's not just loss of density. The fluid line, the chairs, the lever. Some realizations come slowly, not because they're hard to understand, but because they're hard to look at. This one hit me after thinking too long about the others. Near the end, during the last stage of the final transition, there's a kind of suffering that doesn't get better. The people in the experiment, they knew more than I do. They had guidance, support. They understood that this wasn't just blood or electrolyte loss, it was fluid migration. Inside the body, and that abdominal fluid, it moves, it rises. They learned that if they laid down, that fluid would move upward, carrying the fuel the candidiasis was waiting for while it was wrapped in the apoptotic cell lining. They didn't want that, because whatever was in that fluid, sugar, ketones, whatever, fed the thing they were trying to starve, the invader. So they sat up, always. They slept sitting up, because staying vertical kept the monster at bay just a little longer, and they knew that. But they also knew there was a line. The photo, the one I can't stop thinking about, it's a room filled with uncomfortable reclining chairs, functional, not cozy. Each chair had a lever, just a simple mechanical thing next to it. And the people, each one in their own chair, were waiting, fighting, suffering. The article said when someone was done, when the pain became too much, all they had to do was reach for the lever, pull it. The chair would tip back, feet up, head down. The fluid would rise, or fall, as you would see it, and the pituitary, drenched in sugar and fuel and overload, would shut down. Hyperosmolar coma, the article called it. Simple, final, a flood that drowns the switchboard. I remember that part so well, as an aside. You can't forget words like hyperosmolar coma, and know that they're talking about it being the end of someone. And so it was something that I immediately had to look up and find out what it meant. Sometimes it said the room was quiet. Then the sound of a lever being pulled would cut through. Click, brrr, another chair tipped. Another end. I don't know where these photos went. Maybe they were never meant to stay, but I remember what they showed, and if you've ever wondered what science that had to be erased looks like, this was it. Grotesque, sacred, tragic, and real. They say the camera doesn't lie, but apparently it can be silenced. A few more notes from the article. One of them, well, yeah, this one's wild. Apparently the women of the time actually preferred the men who'd reached the final phase of the condition. I know. I wish I were making that up. I'm not. I'm just laying down the facts, uncomfortable as they may be. Why? Well, for several reasons. For one, by the time they got to the end game, the men's bodies reset. Like, literally. They look like they did when they first got the condition. You'd think, okay, but now they're older. Shouldn't they be wrinkly and worn down? Nope. Aside, check my videos. Not wrinkly. Nope, their skin was tight, real tight, and not from Botox. The skin was also remarkably soft because the epidermal layer is actually a sponge holding fluid. I admit that more than one woman told me while I was in my 40s that I had the softest skin. The article discussed a mechanism, something about apoptosis plus prolonged exposure to a slightly acidic internal pH. I'll work it out after the funny parts. We need some humor about now. Basically, the cells shrink, all of them. Not great on the inside, trust me, that smarts. But externally, kind of Benjamin Button. I'm not joking when I say I have fewer wrinkles now at 56 than I did at 50. My face is smoother, looks weirdly young. The silver mop on top ruins the illusion, of course. That and the fact I shuffle around like a broken Roomba after the most recent transition about a month ago. That's over a year ago now. But still, tight skin. Oh, and the other reason the women notice these guys? Endurance. Yeah, that kind. I know. Insert awkward pause here. And yeah, we're having a little fun here, but this is real. This is all real. Fist pump.